This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And as always, so good to be with you as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. In just a little bit, I'm going to introduce you to Jeff Gray. He's the CEO of Cirtec Corporation. He's going to fill us in on what his speech is going to be like, his talk, his presentation, I should say, is going to be like at the Metricon conference. He's also going to have a table there, and you can visit with him. Cirtec is a fascinating company and quite necessary, and we're very glad to have them as part of Metricon. And interesting enough, you can find out more about Metricon, which is going on November 6th at the Hearst Convention Center. Just go to our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz, on the right-hand side of your screen. You'll see a link. And in the second half hour, we're going to hear from Saraju Mohanty. He's with the Department of Computer Sciences and Engineering at the University of North Texas in Denton. He's talking about smart healthcare demystified. And Christoph Solder will be with us. He is associate professor of the Computer Science and Engineering Department, University of Texas in Arlington. And we'll visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set of the second half of the program, and, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Well, if you've been listening to their programs, you know we've been covering the events that are going on at Metricon, the 32nd year, sponsored by Lockheed Martin and some others. And we've got another sponsor with us today, Cirtec, and its CEO, Jeff Gray. And he's going to be at Metricon this year speaking, and also is going to have a central table where you can go and visit him and learn more about the things that Cirtec is about. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Good afternoon.
You're quite a company, as I understand, and have been working with a number of the labs and things around the country, and I understand that you've got some solutions that are very applicable to Lockheed Martin and some new and upcoming things that you and I talked about when last we spoke. Can you kind of fill us in on that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So we were graciously asked to, myself personally, to come and participate by a colleague of ours that happens to work at Lockheed Martin. And she had requested that we come and talk about a topic that's growing in importance that has to do with qualification of software tools as they relate to the regulatory certification processes. So as a company, that's an area where we have deep expertise, and we offer solutions for several commercial products that are widely used in the aerospace, automotive, medical device industries, and that we believe will provide some good information for the audience at Metricon.
Okay, good. You were saying that it was some pretty new stuff, and companies like Lockheed are going to have to be prepared. Can you give us a little more insight on that?
Yeah, so one of the things that's been happening over the last several years, we tend to use the term this unification of standards. And one of the things that we're seeing, particularly in the military aerospace market, is more reliance and even contractual obligations that reference the commercial airworthiness standards as the guidelines for developing safe and reliable systems to operate on those aircraft platforms. For many years in the commercial industries, companies that develop avionics and systems that go on those aircraft have been required to qualify the software tools that they use as part of their safety critical development process. And that's a relatively new requirement as these new contracts are being let in the military market that are requiring compliance with these new commercial standards or these existing commercial standards. And so we're hoping to share some information about what's involved in that process and some of the solutions that are available that make it easier to achieve compliance to those new standards.
Okay, and are you saying that this isn't just in the defense realm, but this is in commercial aircraft too? I mean, is this something that Boeing is going to be interested in talking about? Certainly in light of recent difficulties that the Boeing 737 has had?
Yeah, and not necessarily directly related to those challenges they're facing currently, but So the same kind of thing when we talk about, when you think about the use of software tools in the development of these systems, there's a number of different ways that tools are used. And what the commercial aircraft market and industry had recognized many years ago, literally decades ago, was that we oftentimes rely on those tools to do things. I mean, you use a tool to do work, and you rely on that tool to do work that you trust that it does correctly. And what they recognized many years ago was that for those areas of functionality where you depend on that tool to function correctly, you have to go through a process to prove that it actually does do what you think it does. And to get the full benefit out of the use of the tool, the process that they came up with was called tool qualification. So those things have been in the commercial sector for a long time because the military is now often citing compliance with those commercial standards in their new contracts. It's now finding its way into the military, but there are similar requirements in the medical device industry and in the automotive industry and other industries where safety and mission critical concerns exist.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I was just speaking recently with Governor Stephen Hollis, who's with IBM, and he was telling me about the difficulties that are having with the engineering of autonomous automobiles and this sort of thing, and cars not, you know, cars stopping when they're not supposed to, and other things that are happening with these new tools that are being put into automotive. So you were saying that these same standards start out first in, let's say, the defense or aerospace, and then can be brought down to earth, so to speak, in our automobiles regular commercial airplanes.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, many of the practices and processes, sometimes I use the term the recipe for making a safe and reliable system is very similar from one industry to the next. There are certainly nuances associated with a commercial aircraft versus an autonomous vehicle, but a large percentage of the underlying process is very similar, and specifically as it relates to the use of software tools, it's incredibly similar. And for the same reasons, because in those processes, the tools are relied upon to provide features and functions that we just expect to work. And maybe to add a little clarity there, a common tool that we all use in the software realm is a word processor. And, you know, if we write a document in Microsoft Word, you can't just presume the document is correct because you used Word to write it. And the way that you verify that output of that tool is you manually read what you wrote.
Yeah.
And so there's a manual verification of the output of that tool. And in that case, because it's manually verified, there's no need to do a qualification. You've already proven the output is what you expect it to be. But some of the software tools that are used, the outputs are much more detailed and the volume of data is significantly higher. And so you tend to want to be able to trust that when the tool processed that data, it produced the correct result. And manually verifying that is cumbersome and time-consuming, error-prone, and incredibly expensive. However, if you go through a process to prove that the tool operates correctly, you're allowed to then trust the output of that tool. And so if there are tens of thousands of pieces of data that you would otherwise have to check, you can then trust that the tool processed the data correctly and produced the correct result.
And of course, if you're going to rely on machine learning, which is coming around more all the time, these things would have to be absolutely critical, I would think.
Well, they certainly can be. And another simple example on one of the common ways that people use software tools is to automate a testing process. So whether you're testing a piece of software or testing a piece of hardware, a test automation environment generally includes some utilities for doing a pass-fail analysis on the measured result. So you run a test, you get an answer. The answer is then compared to maybe an upper and lower limit, and a pass or fail determination is assigned to that result. Without qualification of that feature, the limits checking, you would have to manually verify and literally look at every single result, look at the limits, say, yes, it is in fact within the limits, that's a pass, that's a fail. When you qualify those features, you can now trust that it correctly determines pass or fail and you don't have to manually check it. And those are the kinds of things that when you start to really look at all the tools that are used in a modern development process and all the features and functions that we take for granted are working correctly, you know, we just assume because it comes in a shrink wrap box on a disk that looks professional that it works. Well, the safety and mission critical industries, that's not good enough. There's more you have to do to prove that it does what you think it does.
Well, then how do you work? Do you go right into these companies and work with their on-site equipment, or do they send you out to samples of their stuff that they do and you run it through your labs and that sort of thing? Or what's the process here?
So it's actually a mix of the two. Oftentimes, we're able to do the assessments, and a large percentage of the development work associated with a tool qualification here at our facilities. There are also cases where we may need to go on site and understand better the process in which that tool is used so we can better define what aspects of the tool's functionality would create a risk scenario where if the tool didn't work correctly, this particular defect could escape and potentially result in a defect being in the product that gets put in the field. So the other thing that we do, and we have done on numerous occasions, is we've actually gone and created a suite of products for some of the more popular software tools that are used across many industries and many companies, and we've actually productized a solution that helps the customer achieve tool qualification very rapidly and cost effectively because we're able to amortize those costs across a larger user base.
Well, that was going to be my next question, is experiences that you've had in other situations, if you're able to apply those lessons in the areas that you would be working with some new client. And this seems to answer the question is yes.
Yeah, and, you know, as an example, you mentioned IBM earlier. We are a member of IBM's partner program, and several years ago, we invested in developing tool qualification solutions for the IBM suite of tools that's used for collaborative lifecycle management, often referred to as the IBM CLM suite. That includes things like requirements management. Many people are familiar with DOORS, which is a very common requirements management solution that's used across many companies. There are also collaborative development and build environments for software development. And another product that is supporting test and test data management that are all designed to work together. And what we've done is created a suite of tool qualification solutions to complement those products. So those products do great and wonderful things. They bring a lot of time-saving features that benefit the development teams. What we've done is brought a suite of tool qualification alongside that to lower the hurdle for achieving qualification on those types of tools.
Okay, you're going to be speaking at Metricon in addition to having a table there and where people can come and visit with you and learn a little bit more about the organization. What are your plans? Are you going to do some demonstrations, or you have some things you're going to show, or mainly a tutorial, or what are you planning to do at Metricon?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I'll be speaking and presenting a session on this topic, and it's kind of a tool qual 101, just to get people familiar with the concept and kind of the basics of the process. At the table, we'll have some demonstration materials as well as some flyers and things related to some of the solutions that we've created that are available commercially. And we'll be able to sit down and walk people through so they can get a much better sense of what we're actually talking about. Because there is a tendency for people who haven't had to do these kinds of things to not really understand what we mean by tool quality. You know, they often confuse tool qualification with software quality assurance. Mm-hmm. And while there are some similarities, it's not intended to replace an SQA type program. It's more specifically tailored to how the tool is used in a particular process and what dependencies that user has on those tools to work correctly.
Your company is known as CERTEC. I believe that probably a certification technology. Is that short for that? Is that how you arrived at the name?
That is correct.
Okay, good. Very good. Look down the road a little bit, maybe 5 or 10 years or so. Technology is coming on us faster all the time, and what do you see in the future, maybe 5 or 10 years from now?
Well, I think one of the things, and you touched on it, is that technology is increasingly pervasive in almost every aspect of our lives. And you can look at the modern automobile as a great example. And if you think back maybe 20 years, the advanced features on cars 20 years ago was cruise control. Mm. There really wasn't any of the things you find on today's vehicles with automatic braking systems and forward-looking radars and lane assist and all of these things that we very quickly become dependent on without even realizing. I think we'll continue to see that trend continue or, you know, move on. I think the the critical nature of the features and functionality will be more and more software dependent, and we'll see a lot more activity in the space around how do we make sure these software systems are safe and reliable. And that's an area where we've focused for the past 20 years, and we're very excited about the opportunities that we see coming in the future.
Oh, I would think so. I mean, self-driving cars, and we're I'm in Dallas, and Uber is having a headquarters here, and is going to be flying taxis. And so, there's a lot of pretty astounding things. My son just got a new vehicle. It doesn't have a steering column. It's all electronic. And he turns the steering wheel, and there's electrical signals that go to wherever it goes and turns the wheel for him. And then when he pulls up to a stoplight, the car stops. Actually, it's a pickup truck. Comes to the engine shuts off. And then when he hits the gas pedal, it fires back up again. I mean, I'm not sure I'm, can we feel safe with this stuff? I kind of like mechanics of a steering column and not have to worry about the electrical system being shorted out by something or commanded by some foreign power somehow or other. And I was with my sweetheart the other day. We were at a drive-in restaurant getting a hamburger late at night, and her battery went dead. Well, we didn't know if it was the alternator or the battery or what it was. We got jumped by AAA, and then all the way home, I kept thinking about my son. What if her car had one of those things on it where it stops, and the battery didn't have enough juice to start it back up again? So I'm not, there's a certain trepidation with these new systems.
Well, and behind all of that new functionality is embedded software. And one of the things that is true is that software doesn't wear out. It doesn't. It does the same thing over and over and over again. And it's hard to get your mind around at times. But the reliability of those systems has the potential to be much, much higher because it's not dependent on electromechanical things. Now, there are certainly electromechanical things to make a car go, but the intelligence behind it can be built in such a way that, it doesn't wear out. It provides an opportunity to make incredibly safe and reliable systems with appropriate redundancy and all those things. And maybe you have a backup battery in that car. That allows you to limp home to get, a new battery put in or something like that. But there's tremendous potential in what can happen with that technology, and we're excited to be part of that.
Well, Jeff Gray, you're making me feel a little better. Jeff Gray, incidentally, if you just tuned in, is CEO of Certec LLC, going to be a speaker at the Metricon conference going on November 6th at the Hearst Convention Center, and it's about halfway between Dallas and Fort Worth. You'll be able to see him there and visit with him. You'll have a table, and be incredibly interesting. But Jeff, right now we have to break for the half hour, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you for some words of wisdom.
Wow. I probably do. I need to give that some thought for a second.
Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today? Why, look, it's Billy Strayhorn, the longtime composer for Duke Ellington, with his Four Freedoms.
Freedom from hate? Unconditionally. Freedom from self-pity. Freedom from the fear of possibly doing something that may help someone else more than it would you. And freedom from the kind of pride that could make a man feel that he is better than his brother.